And down the drive I went, carrying a heart blocked up like boulder dam across my arteries, yet with my feet like bird wings and arms like talons, ready to fly across the field, except that I didn't want to give anybody that much of a show or win the race by accident. I smell the hot, dry day now as I run towards the end. I rip a piece of tree bark with my fingers and stuff it in my mouth, chewing wood and dust and maybe maggots as I run until I'm nearly sick, yet swallowing what I can of it just the same, because a little birdie whistled to me that I've got to go on living for at least a bloody sight longer yet, but that for 6 months I'm not going to smell that grass or taste that dusty bark or trot down this lovely path. I hate to have to say this, but something bloody well made me cry. And crying is a thing I haven't bloody well done since I was a kid of two or three. Because I'm slowing down now for Gunthorpe to catch me up, and I'm doing it in a place just where the drive runs into the sports field, where they can see what I'm doing, especially the governor and his gang from the grandstand, and I'm going so slow, I'm almost marking time. Those on the nearest seats haven't caught on yet to what's happening, and are still cheering like mad, ready for when I make that mark. And I keep on wondering when the bleeding hell Gunthorpe behind me is going to nip by onto the field, because I can't hold this up all day. And I think, oh Christ, it's just my rotten luck that Gunthorpe has dropped out, and I'll be here for half an hour before the next bloke comes up. But even so, I say, I won't budge. I won't go for the last 100 yards if I have to sit down cross-legged on the grass and have the governor in his chinless wonders pick me up and carry me there, which is against their rules, so you can bet they'd never do it because they're not clever enough to break the rules, like I would in their place, even though they are their own. No, I'll show him what honesty means if it's the last thing I do, though I'm sure he'll never understand, because if he and all them like him did, it'd mean they'd be on my side, which is impossible. By God, I'll stick this out like my dad stuck out his pain and kick them doctors down the stairs. If he had guts for that, then I have got guts for this. And here I stay, waiting for Gunthorpe or Aylsham to bash that turf and go right slap up against that bit of clothesline stretched across the winning post. As for me, the only time I'll hit that clothesline will be when I'm dead and a comfortable coffin's been got ready on the other side. Until then, I'm a long-distance runner, crossing country all on my own, no matter how bad it feels. The Essex boys were shouting themselves blue in the face, telling me to get a move on, waving their arms, standing up and making as if to run at that rope themselves, because there were only a few yards to the side of it. You cranky lot, I thought, stuck at the winning post, and yet I knew they didn't mean what they were shouting, were really on my side and always would be, not able to keep them all as to themselves, in and out of cop shops and clink. And there they were, now having the time of their lives, letting themselves go in cheering me, which made the governor think they were heart and soul on his side, when he wouldn't have thought any such thing if he'd had a grain of sense. And I could hear the lords and ladies now from the grandstand, could see them standing up to wave me in. Run! But I was deaf, daft and blind, and stood where I was, still tasting the bark in my mouth, and still blubbing like a baby, blubbing now out of gladness that I'd got them beat at last. Because I heard a roar, and I saw the Gunthorpe gang throwing their coats up in the air, and I felt the pat-pat of feet on the drive behind me getting closer and closer, and suddenly a smell of sweat and a pair of lungs on their last gasp passed by me and went swinging on towards that rope, all shagged out and rocking from side to side, grunting like a Zulu that didn't know any better, like the ghost of me at 90, when I'm heading for that fat, upholstered coffin. I could have cheered him myself. Go on, get cracking. Knot yourself up on that piece of tape. But he was already there, and so I went on, trotting after him until I got to the rope, with a murderous-sounding roar going up through my ears, while I was still on the wrong side of it. It's about time to stop. Though don't think I'm not still running, because I am, one way or the other. The governor at Borstal proved me right. He didn't respect my honesty at all. Not that I expected him to, or tried to explain it to him. But if he's supposed to be educated, then he should have more or less twigged it. He got his own back right enough, or thought he did, because he had me carting dustbins about every morning from the big full working kitchen to the garden bottoms where I had to empty them. And in the afternoon I spread out slops on spuds and carrots growing in the allotments. In the evenings I scrubbed floors, miles and miles of them. But it wasn't a bad life for 6 months, which is another thing he could never understand and would have made it grimmer if he could. And it was worth it when I look back on it, considering all the thinking I did and the fact that the boys caught on to me losing the race on purpose and never had enough good words to say about me, or curses to throw out to themselves at the governor. The work didn't break me. If anything, it made me stronger in many ways, and the governor knew when I left that his spite had got him nowhere. For since leaving Borstal, they tried to get me in the army, but I didn't pass the medical. I'll tell you why. No sooner was I out after that final run and 6 months hard that I went down with pleurisy, which means, as far as I'm concerned, that I lost the governor's race all right and won my own twice over, because I know for certain that if I hadn't raced my race, I wouldn't have got this pleurisy, which keeps me out of khaki, but doesn't stop me doing the sort of work my itchy fingers want to do. I'm out now, and the heat switched on again, but the rats haven't got me for the last big thing I pulled. I counted £628, and I'm still living off it, because I did the job all on my own. And after it, I had the peace to write all this, and it'll be money enough to keep me going until I finish my plans for doing an even bigger snatch, something up my sleeve that I wouldn't tell to a living soul. I worked out my systems and hiding places while pushing scrubbing brushes round them Borstal floors, planned my outward life of innocence and honest work, yet at the same time grew perfect in the razor edges of my craft for what I knew I had to do once free, and what I'll do again if netted by the poaching coppers. In the meantime, as they say in one or two books I've read since, useless though, because all of them ended up on a winning post and didn't teach me a thing, I'm going to give this story to a pal of mine and tell him that if I do get captured again by the coppers, he can try and get it put into a book or something. Because I'd like to see the governor's face when he reads it, if he does, which I don't suppose he will. Even if he did read it, though, I don't think he'd know what it was all about. And if I don't get caught, the bloke I give this story to will never give me away. He's lived in our terrace for as long as I can remember, and he's my pal. That I do know. On Saturday Afternoon by Alan Sillitoe. I once saw a bloke try to kill himself. I'll never forget the day, because I was sitting in the house one Saturday afternoon, feeling black and fed up because everybody in the family had gone to the pictures except me, who'd for some reason been left out of it. Of course, I didn't know then that I would soon see something you can never see in the same way on the pictures, a real bloke stringing himself up. I was only a kid at the time, so you can imagine how much I enjoyed it. I've never known a family look as black as our family when they're fed up. I've seen the old man with his face so dark and full of murder, because he ain't got no fags, or was having to use saccharin to sweeten his tea, or even for nothing at all, that I've backed out of the house in case he got up from his fireside chair and came for me. He just sits there, almost on top of the fire, his oil-stained Sunday joint maul has opened out in front of him and facing inwards to each other, his thick shoulders scrunched forward, and his dark brown eyes staring into the fire. Now and again he'll say a dirty word for no reason at all, the worst you can think of, and when he starts saying this, you know it's time to clear out. If Mam's in, it gets worse than ever, because she says sharp to him, "What are you looking so bloody black for?" as if it might be because of something she's done. But before you know what's happening, he's tipped up a table full of pots, and Mam's gone out of the house crying. Dad hunches over the fire and goes on swearing, all because of a packet of fags. I once saw him broodier than I'd ever seen him, so that I thought he'd gone crackers in a quiet sort of way, until a fly flew to within a yard of him. Then his hand shot out, got it, and slung it, crippled, into the roaring fire. After that, he cheered up a bit and mashed some tea. Well, that's where the rest of us get our black looks from. it stands to reason we'd have them with a dad who carries on like that, don't it? Black looks run in the family. Some families have them, and some don't. Our family has them right enough, and that's for certain. So when we're fed up, we're really fed up. Nobody knows why we get as fed up as we do, or why it gives us these black looks when we are. Some people get fed up and don't look bad at all. They seem happy in a funny sort of way, as if they'd just been set free from clink after being in there for something they didn't do, or come out of the pictures after sitting plugged for 8 hours at a bad film, or just missed a bus they ran half a mile for and seen it was the wrong one just after they'd stopped running. But in our family, it's murder for the others if one of us is fed up. I've asked myself lots of times what it is, but I can never get any sort of answer, even if I sit and think for hours, which I must admit I don't do, though it looks good when I say I do. But I sit and think for long enough until Mam says to me, at seeing me scrunched up over the fire like Dad, "What are you looking so black for?" So I've just got to stop thinking about it in case I get really black and fed up and go the same way as me dad, tipping up a table full of pots and all. Mostly, I suppose, there's nothing to look so black for, though it's nobody's fault and you can't blame anyone for looking black because I'm sure it's something in the blood. But on this Saturday afternoon, I was looking so black that when Dad came in from the bookies, he said to me, "What's up with you?" "I feel badly," I fibbed. He'd have had a fit if I'd said I was only black because I hadn't gone to the pictures. "Well, have a wash," he told me. "I don't want to wash," I said, and that was a fact. "Well, get outside and get some fresh air then," he shouted. I did as I was told, double quick, because if ever Dad goes as far as to tell me to get some fresh air, I know it's time to get away from him. But outside, the air wasn't so fresh, what with that bloody great bike factory bashing away at the yard end. I didn't know where to go to, so I walked up the yard a bit and sat down near somebody's back gate. Then I saw this bloke who hadn't lived long in our yard. He was tall and thin and had a face like a parson, except that he wore a flat cap and had a moustache that drooped and looked as though he hadn't had a square meal for a year. I didn't think much of this at the time, but I remember that as he turned in by the yard end, one of the nosy, gossiping women who stood there every minute of the day, except when she trudged to the pawn shop with her husband's bike or best suit, shouted to him, "What's that rope for, mate?" He called back, "It's to hang myself wi' missus." And she cackled at this bloody good joke so loud and long, you'd think she'd never heard such a good'un. Though the next day she cackled on the other side of her fat face. He walked by me, puffing a fag and carrying his coil of brand new rope, and he had to step over me to get past. His boot nearly took my shoulder off. And when I told him to watch where he was going, I don't think he heard me, because he didn't even look round. Hardly anybody was about. All the kids were still at the pictures, and most of their mams and dads were downtown doing the shopping. The bloke walked down the yard to his back door, and having nothing better to do because I hadn't gone to the pictures, I followed him. You see, he left his back door open a bit, so I gave it a push and went in. I stood there, just watching him, sucking my thumb, the other hand in my pocket. I suppose that he knew I was there because his eyes were moving more natural now, but he didn't seem to mind. "What are you going to do with that rope, mate?" I asked him.
"I'm going to hang myself, lad," he told me, as though he'd done it a time or two already, and people had usually asked him questions like this beforehand.
"What for, mate?" He must have thought I was a nosy young bugger.
"'Cause I want to, that's what for," he said,
clearing all the pots off the table and putting it into the middle of the room. Then he stood on it to fasten the rope to the light fitting. The table creaked and didn't look very safe, but it did him for what he wanted. "It went hold up, mate," I said to him, thinking how much better it was being here than sitting in the pictures and seeing the Jungle Gym serial. But he got nettled now and turned on me.
"Mind your own business."
I thought he was going to tell me to scram, but he didn't. He made ever such a fancy knot with that rope, as though he'd been a sailor or summat, and as he tied it, he was whistling a fancy tune to himself. Then he got down from the table and pushed it back to the wall and put a chair in its place. He wasn't looking black at all, nowhere near as black as anybody in our family when they're feeling fed up. If ever he'd looked only half as black as our dad looked twice a week, he'd have hanged himself years ago, I couldn't help thinking. but he was making a good job of that rope all right, as though he'd thought about it a lot anyway, and as though it was going to be the last thing he'd ever do. But I knew something he didn't know, because he wasn't standing where I was. I knew the rope wouldn't hold up, and I told him so again. "Shut your gob," he said, "but quiet like, or I'll kick you out." I didn't want to miss it, so I said nothing. He took his cap off and put it on the dresser. Then he took his coat off and his scarf and spread them out on the sofa. I wasn't a bit frightened, like I might be now at 16, because it was interesting. And being only 10, I'd never had a chance to see a bloke hang himself before. We got pallid, the two of us, before he slipped the rope round his neck. "Shut the door," he asked me, and I did as I was told. "You're a good lad for your age," he said to me, while I sucked my thumb, and he felt in his pockets and pulled out all that was inside, throwing the handful of bits and bobs on the table, fag packet and peppermints, a pawn ticket, an old comb and a few coppers. He picked out a penny and gave it to me, saying, "Now listen to me, young'un. I'm going to hang myself, and when I'm swinging, I want you to give this chair a bloody good kick and push it away. All right?" I nodded. He put the rope round his neck and then took it off like it was a tie that didn't fit. What are you going to do it for, mate?" I asked again. "Because I'm fed up," he said, looking very unhappy. "And because I want to. Me missus left me, and I'm out of work." I didn't want to argue, because the way he said it, I knew he couldn't do anything else except hang himself. And there was a funny look on his face. Even when he talked to me, I swear he couldn't see me. It was different to the black looks my old man puts on. And I suppose that's why my old man would never hang himself, worse luck, because he never gets a look into his clock like this bloke had. My old man's look stares at you, so that you have to back down and fly out of the house. This bloke's look looked through you, so that you could face it, and it wouldn't do you any harm. So I saw now that Dad would never hang himself, because he could never get the right sort of look into his face, in spite of the fact that he'd been out of work often enough. Maybe Mam would have to leave him first, and then he might do it. But no, I shook my head. There wasn't much chance of that, even though he did lead her a dog's life. "You won't forget to kick that chair away," he reminded me, and I swung my head to say I wouldn't. So my eyes were popping, and I watched every move he made. He stood on the chair and put the rope round his neck so that it fitted this time, still whistling his fancy tune. I wanted to get a better gauze at the knot, because my pal was in the scouts and would ask to know how it was done, and if I told him later, he'd let me know what happened at the pictures in the Jungle Gym serial, so as I could have me cake and eat it as well, as Mam says, tit for tat. But I thought I'd better not ask the bloke to tell me, and I stayed back in me corner. The last thing he did was to take the wet, dirty butt end from his lips and sling it into the empty fire grate, following it with his eyes to the black fireback where it landed, as if he was then going to mend a fault in the lighting, like any electrician. Suddenly his long legs wriggled and his feet tried to kick the chair, so I helped him as I promised I would and took a runner at it as if I was playing centre-forward for Notts Forest, and the chair went scooting back against the sofa, dragging his muffler to the floor as it tipped over. He swung for a bit, his arms chafing like he was a scarecrow flapping birds away, and he made a noise in his throat, as if he'd just took a dose of salts and was trying to make them stay down. Then there was another sound, and I looked up and saw a big crack come in the ceiling, like you see on the pictures when there's an earthquake happening, and the bulb began circling round and round as though it was a spaceship. I was just beginning to get dizzy when, thank Christ, he fell down with such a horrible thump on the floor that I thought he'd broke every bone he'd got. He kicked around for a bit like a dog that's got colic bad. Then he lay still. I didn't stay to look at him. I told him that rope wouldn't hold up, I kept saying to myself as I went out of the house, tut-tutting because he hadn't done the job right, hands stuffed deep into me pockets and nearly crying at the balls up he'd made of everything. I slammed his gate so hard with disappointment that it nearly dropped off its hinges. Just as I was going back up the yard to get me tea at home, hoping the others had come back from the pictures so as I wouldn't have anything to keep on being black about, a copper passed me and headed for the bloke's door. He was striding quickly, with his head bent forward, and I knew that somebody had narked. They must have seen him by the rope and then tipped off the cop. Or happen the old hen at the yard end had finally caught on. Or perhaps he'd even told somebody himself, because I supposed that the bloke who'd strung himself up hadn't much known what he was doing, especially with the look I'd seen in his eyes. But that's how it is, I said to myself as I followed the copper back to the bloke's house. A poor bloke can't even hang himself these days. When I got back, the copper was slitting the rope from his neck with a penknife. Then he gave him a drink of water, and the bloke opened his peepers. I didn't like the copper, because he'd got a couple of my mates sent to approved school for pinching lead piping from lavatories.
"What did you want to hang yourself for?"
he asked the bloke, trying to make him sit up. He could hardly talk, and one of his hands was bleeding from where the light bulb had smashed. I knew that rope wouldn't hold up, but he hadn't listened to me. I'll never hang myself anyway, but if I want to, I'll make sure I do it from a tree or something like that, not a light fitting.
Well, what did you do it for?
Because I wanted to, the bloke croaked.
You'll get 5 years for this,
the copper told him. I'd crept back into the house and was sucking my thumb in the same corner.
That's what you think,
the bloke said, a normal frightened look in his eyes now.
I only wanted to hang myself. Well, said the copper, taking out his book, it's against the law, you know.
Nay, the bloke said, it can't be. It's my life, ain't it?
You might think so, the copper said, but it ain't.
That's the first thing I knew, he said.
Well, I'm telling you,
the copper told him. Of course, I didn't let on to the copper that I'd helped the bloke to hang himself. I wasn't born yesterday, nor the day before yesterday either.
It's a fine thing if a bloke can't take his own life,
the bloke said, seeing he was in for it.
Well, he can't,
the copper said, as if reading out of his book and enjoying it.
It ain't your life, and it's a crime to take your own life. It's killing yourself. It's suicide.
The bloke looked hard, as if every one of the copper's words meant 6 months cold. I felt sorry for him, and that's a fact. But if only he'd listened to what I'd said and not depended on that light fitting. He should have done it from a tree or something like that. He went up to the yard with the copper, like a peaceful lamb, and we all thought that was the end of that. But a couple of days later, the news has flashed through to us, even before it got to the post, because a woman in our yard worked at the hospital of an evening, dishing out grub and tidying up. I heard her spilling it to somebody at the yard end. I'd never have thought it. I thought he'd got that daft idea out of his head when they took him away, but no, wonders'll never cease. Chucked his scent from the hospital window when the copper who sat near his bed went off for a pee. Would you believe it? Dead? Ooh, not much he ain't. He'd heaved himself at the glass and fallen like a stone onto the road. In one way I was sorry he'd done it, but in another I was glad, because he'd proved to the coppers and everybody whether it was his life or not all right. It was marvellous, though, the way the brainless bastards had put him in a ward 6 floors up, which finished him off all right, proper, even better than a tree. All of which will make me think twice about how black I sometimes feel. The black coal bag locked inside you and the black look it puts on your face doesn't mean you're going to string yourself up or sling yourself under a double-decker, or chuck yourself out of a window, or cut your throat with a sardine tin, or put your head in the gas oven, or drop your rotten sack bag of a body onto a railway line, because when you're feeling that black, you can't even move from your chair. Anyhow, I know I'll never get so black as to hang myself, because hanging don't look very nice to me, and never will, the more I remember old what's-his-name swinging from the light fitting. More than anything else, I'm glad now I didn't go to the pictures that Saturday afternoon when I was feeling black and ready to do myself in. Because, you know, I shan't ever kill myself, trust me. I'll stay alive, half balmy, till I'm 105, and then go out screaming blue murder, because I want to stay where I am.